we're doing a Rashi in Acharei Mos. So it's Perak Yud Chas. Okay. So the Perak begins as follows. So Vayikra Yud Chas. Okay. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Leimah. Vayidaber al Bnei Yisrael v'amarta alehem. Ani Hashem alekechem. Okay. So I am Hashem, right? That's what Hashem says. Fine. Then he says, "Kimaisa Eretz Mitzrayim Asher Yishavtem Bah Lo Sasu," like the actions of Eretz Mitzrayim that you dwelt there, you shall not do. "Uchmaisa Eretz Canaan Asher Ani Meviyasam Shama Lo Sasu," nor like the actions of Canaan that I'm bringing you into, you shall not do. Okay. "Uchugasem Lo Silichu," and don't go in their ways, okay, in their statutes. Okay, so don't do like those other guys who you, of the past and of the future. You guys are different, right? Don't go in their ways. Okay, so the Rashi says, so the actions of the Mitzrayim and the Canaanim were more corrupt than all the other nations. Okay? Okay, fine. And the place where they actually dwelt in Mitzrayim was even worse. So saying that the nations which the Jews went from and went to are very corrupt. Okay? Don't go in their ways. Okay? What's it including? Basically saying don't go in their ways. Let's leave that alone for now. So basically saying don't go. You're going into the land. Don't do like the Mitzrayim. Don't do like the Canaanim. Okay, maybe at the end we'll come back to this part about what were the Mitzrayim, what did the Mitzrayim do, and what did the Canaan do. But for now, you can just know that they're corrupt. Fine. As Mishpat Tasu, rather you should do my Mishpatim, God is saying. Alright? And you should guard my statutes, my chukim, lalach aspahem, to go in them. Ani Hashem alkeh. Okay, and you shall guard my statutes and my just laws. That a person will do them and he'll live by them. Okay, fine. Nice. Okay, Rashi. Rashi on Pasuk Daled. As Mishpatai Tasu. So what is it? You notice it's saying Mishpatim and Chukim. Right? You should do the Mishpatim and you should guard the Chukim. So first of all, what's the difference between Mishpatim and Chukim? And why are you doing the Chukim, the Mishpatim, and guarding the Chukim? And then what does Alach Asbah mean? Okay, you should do my Mishpatim, guard my Chukim, to go in them, and Yashan Lakechem. To go in them. What does that mean? Okay, so Rashi says this, Mishpatai Tasu, Elu Dvarim Ha'amurim B'Torah B'Mishpat. Okay, it's the things in the Torah which are said regarding justice. She'ilu lo namru, hayu gedai lomar. Even had they not been said, right, it would have been appropriate to say them. Okay? Like sometimes they're called mitzvah sichlios, mitzvahs which like steal and don't kill and things like that. Right? Things which, it's a mishpat, God codified it, and I guess he told us the parameters of it. Of these things, but essentially they're mitzvahs which you would have known without the mitzvah. Right? Every society almost has these types of things, albeit in different forms and details, but whatever. So those are mishpatim. You should do those. Although your rational faculty might know that it's correct, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to keep it. So the saying is you should do them. God endorses them and says it's appropriate, a person should do them. Fine. That makes sense. V'eschukasai tishmiru, and you should guard my chukim, devaram shein gzeir samach. So the chukim are the things which are gzeirah of the king, the decree of the king. She'yetzer hara meshev aleim, that the yetzer hara questions them. Lama lana l'shamim. Why do we have to keep these things? Right? The yetzer hara says that. And not only that, the nations of the world also ask on them. Kigon, achilas chazir, don't eat pig, Levisha Shanis, don't wear Shanis, Vitairas Mechata, and if you come in contact with the dead, the corpse, then you have to do paraduma, sprinkle these ashes on you, right? The red gown. The Kach Ne'amar, because of the fact that the nations and the Yetzihara question these, therefore the Pasuk says, Ani Hashem. That's why on this thing it says, Ani Hashem, at the end of this Pasuk. What does it mean, Ani Hashem? Gezerasi Gezarti Alechem. I decreed it upon you. I Atem Rasha'en Li Pater. You're not allowed to become exempt from them. Or you're not able to. You're not able to become exempt from them. Okay? So.
The last part.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to ask. That's the part which is strange to me. What does that mean? You're not allowed to become exempt from them. And so you don't say, Niyashem. It's a gezeira, that's it. You're not allowed to become exempt from them. You're not able to become exempt from them. Well, who's talking about becoming exempt from them? Right? What does that mean?
Part of the mishpatim, you can.
Right.
In fact, isn't that one of the points of being part of the mishpatim? That even if you find some reason why you shouldn't apply to you, that it's still a mishpatim, you can't exclude yourself?
Okay. Yeah.
That the reasons sometimes make you think that.
Right, that's why the Torah didn't reveal the reasons for our mitzvahs.
Right.
Because the theory, if it revealed them, a person can say, oh, yeah, I mean, yeah.
So that's
the
one.
I don't know, the little case, maybe, I don't know, not sure. I mean, the one case which is references by, it says the one time the Torah did it was by the king. It says the king shouldn't have any wives, so that, and his heart should not be dissuaded. So Shlomo Melech said, oh, I'll have a lot of wives, and my heart won't be swayed, because he's a chacham, he called them, he says, I could control myself. Sure enough, it didn't work. You see, even the greatest chacham, the one time Torah did it, then you know. So that, I guess, is a mishpat. In theory, it's, I don't know, I'm not sure. You know, so it's hard to know. I don't know if it's specific to Chukim or Mishpatim. Okay, and then it says, Lachas Bahem. What does it mean, Lachas Bahem? To go in them? Al tipater mitocha. Don't exempt yourself. Don't take leave of them. Shalot Tomar, don't say, Lamadati Chachmas Yisrael, I already learned the Chachmas Yisrael. Eilech Lama Chachmas Amos, I might as well go now and learn the other nation's Chachma. No, don't do that. Lalachas Bahem. You should go in them. You should keep going in them. Okay? Okay. Okay, so basically what I'd like to understand is that last part. What's that Rashi? The last part of that last Rashi. Question of Chilias. It's like, what is it? Just striking. What's it saying? Don't you like saying, it's chukim are things which are zero of the king? It's a Hara questions it. Why do we have to keep it? The nation of the world question it. Therefore it says, Ani Hashem, I decreed it upon you, you're not allowed to become, you can't become exempt.
What does that term mean? Like, as opposed to other kinds of stuff.
As opposed to other types of what?
Are there like all different ways that a person might not do something, but I feel like Petzer has a specific meaning.
Sounds like it means to become exempt. That's just strange. Like, I don't know. Like it
Why
doesn't
do you?
Something like that. Yeah. Like you get like a, you know, like a dispensation that you don't have to do it or something. It's not clear. I don't know.
Whatever it means, the fact that it comes, the Hashem was gozer, it is the reason why you wouldn't be pater?
Why you would that's not be pater.
Yes, somehow yes, the fact that Hashem decreed it is what's the...
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Slap it.
Right.
Well, saying things that we don't understand, no? We might
yes.
There's no reason for it.
Okay.
So
therefore what?
I think that there's no reason for it.
So what do you say? I think there's no reason for it, therefore I'm exempt from it?
That's a good question. Yeah.
What do you think? I think, look, God commands us this rule. I think into it, I say, oh, there's no reason for that. Okay, I'm exempt. Right? It's like, what kind of thinking is that? I mean, you need to say, by the way, you're not exempt?
Well, that's what it's saying, simply, no.
Yes. It does sound that way, but I'm asking, what's the sense? Why is Rashi saying that? That is what it's saying, but is that a reasonable way to think? I mean,
what's the word?
Rashaim.
Rashaim, what does that mean?
Allowed.
Allowed. Oh, like Rashaim?
Permitted, yeah, like Rashaim. I think so.
And also, even in the Pasuk, Ani Hashem seems to be going on everything. Everything
makes
sense to the Pasuk.
Well, I guess, yeah, right, it's true. I hear what you're saying. I mean, since Ani Hashem sounds like it's going on everything, it's just kind of.
Like,
not even juxtaposed to that, exactly, right? I mean, Lachasbam, it's not clear what Lachasbam is even going on. What's the connection to Lachasbam? Lachasbam, don't go away from them, because you'll say, I learned Torah, I'm done with learning Chotorah, now I learned other nations, Chachma. Like, what's that? Is that somehow connected to this line of reasoning, or is that just like a different question, you know? Yeah. Okay, are we all good on the phone? Any questions or comments?
Category where you're going to have a handle on it and you're going to be able to figure out like whether you know patur or not, in the same way that you can't say that you're finished, like that you've learned enough and that you're done. Like altogether, you have to have always a recognition that the system is beyond anything that a person can ever fully grasp in their life, and it's just beyond, it's just not something that is completely accessible to man.
Okay, so what's, so how do I hear that, but how are you explaining the Torah Shah and the part there, that part?
That maybe in order to make yourself Pater for something, you can't do it unless you understand it, and you have to know that this is coming from the wisdom of the Kadosh Baruch Hu and not something that people can necessarily really understand and make that kind of a decision.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
Can I say something, Rabbi Feder?
Sure.
I don't know, I was kind of just thinking about it a little bit, and I guess I have it for myself and also a lot of people that I encounter. Sometimes when you learn things in Torah and Judaism, and it is something like, let's say, like Paraduma or Shatness or like not eating pig, and it's like a really hard concept for, you know, even if you look into it and everything, but if it's just as a general, a really hard concept for, you know, the average person, you know, like me or something, to understand it. So very often, because you don't understand that, like, scope of God, obviously, you start looking elsewhere, like, for an explanation. Like, let's say, like, reading, like, Dawkins or, like, these other books that try to give, I guess, a better grasp for, like, the human person, you know, to grab onto and like sort of comprehend, but at the same time that's like a very dangerous thing to do, because once you start reading into those types of books and knowledge, it kind of, you start drifting away, I would guess, because it starts right. saying, oh no, this is the reason God could have made this. I don't know, I just kind of right. had it for myself. Like when you have questions, like right. the average person wants answers, and sometimes right. there are questions that are big enough that are sort of
right.
like you could get some insight, but I guess right. you don't have the full picture, and I guess that's like a big
right.
I don't know, it's a big, I guess, threat in Judaism if people start really, right. really looking into other religions and like trying to
right.
fill in all those blanks with those areas,
right.
I guess.
Right, I hear you. So you're saying that's the second part of the Rashi, right? Which he says, don't say, look, I learned the Torah, now I'll learn other nations, Chachma.
Yeah.
Right. But are you addressing the why, what the other part is saying? It's saying Hashem says, I decreed it, you're not allowed to become exempt from it.
Because I think also at the same time, like, I don't know, I feel like a person has that, I guess, entitlement, like, this doesn't make any sense
right.
to me, so
right.
why should I be obligated in doing that? I don't know, I
yeah.
see it all the time,
right.
like,
right.
people
right.
start throwing around Torah and saying, no, this is how I interpret it, so it literally makes no sense, so
right.
I'm
right.
not going to keep it. Like, I've thought into it, and I've thought about it rationally, or, like,
right.
I feel like Shomer Nagir or something, like, people
right.
are like, no, but really, I don't see the insight to it, so, like,
right.
I don't need to do this, like, you know?
Right, okay, good. So what then is the message? God just say, no, you're not allowed? Like, is that really going to talk to people?
Is it going to talk to people?
Like, let's say a person thinks that. So now you show them this Rashi. Hey, Rashi says, Hashem decreed it, you're not allowed to exempt yourself from it. Like, if that's talking to them, presumably it should somehow, you know, answer that question in some way.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Not really, I'm a little bit confused.
No, what you're saying is this Rashi yeah. is talking, a person might hear about these things and may say, oh, why should I keep these things?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And okay, fine, so let's assume that's a fair question and a person's going to think that.
Yeah.
So now this Rashi is addressing that person and it's saying is, because the person might think that, therefore the Torah says, Ani Hashem, which Rashi interprets to mean, I am Hashem, I decreed it upon you, you're not allowed to exempt yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying, is that somehow talking to these people and addressing them and satisfying them, or is it just, like, what's the message which you give to these people? If in fact it is talking to these people, what's the punchline? Like,
right.
I don't know if the person would be taking that opinion, and then you showed them this Rashi, and you say, hey, look, it says, Ani Hashem, I am Hashem, it means you're not allowed to exempt yourself. So is that really going to satisfy the person? And if not, then what is the punchline? It seems like Rashi is talking, like, I hear your point that it's talking to people
right.
who say that, but what is it saying to them?
I mean, there's certain concepts in Judaism, like, at a certain point, there's only so far a person to go to understanding the ways of Hashem, and I feel like the only way for a person, at least for myself, like, I've had the question before, like, why did God create man? Like, that's such a hard question for me to understand, and I've heard a million answers about it, but at a certain point, like, it's kind of like a person has to just accept upon themselves that
right.
there's only so far that they could go, and
right.
you're not exempt from believing in God because it's so hard
right.
for me or another person to wrap around their
right.
head
right.
why, you know, God
right.
did something like that.
Right.
I don't know.
Right, I understand what you mean. Right. Okay, good point. Yeah, it's interesting. Very interesting. It does seem to be a very relevant question. Very common. Yeah. Okay. Someone else?
So the Rashi says you shouldn't exempt yourself?
Yeah, you're not able to exempt yourself, right?
You're not able to.
Yeah, right. You're not allowed or you're not able.
Okay. Because I was thinking, really, the only way that you can really exempt yourself from something in Torah is if you intentionally put yourself into the kind of situation where you're exempt.
Okay.
But maybe, I mean, I don't know if that's what Rashi's talking about, if it's saying you can't do that.
Yeah, I don't think so, because then you could. If that is what he's talking about, like, I'm not sure what you mean, like, maybe make it life and death or something, and then, is that what you know?
Yeah, or, like, you know, go somewhere, like,
Based on,
I don't know what's a great example, but like maybe like lying on a fast day so that you're fasting for less time or something.
Oh, yeah, I don't think he's really saying that, because if he is, then you are able to do that.
Right, right.
Okay, so I want to draw an analogy to parenting. Okay? Now, I don't exactly have the best example, but oftentimes a child will want something very badly, and the answer is no. Okay? That happens sometimes. And the child will persist, and the answer is still no. So, one strategy is to tell the child, it doesn't matter how much you're going to complain about it, the answer is still no. So calm down. You could cry if you want. You could just make yourself bitter for hours. And you're just going to be bitter for hours. You're still not going to get it. The answer is no. This is non-negotiable. Period. So you're going to say, why, this, that, I don't understand, it's not fair, is it? Whatever. All these things, bottom line is the answer is no. Now, I'm not sure how effective the strategy is, but I think sometimes it has some effect. Okay, and I think the idea of the strategy is that when the child is asking, why? I don't understand. Why should it be? Why do I have to go to sleep now? Why do I do this? Why do this? Why do I, right? They don't really want to know why. They feel that if only they could, you know, undermine the parent's logic and reasoning, and they could show the parent that it doesn't really make sense, then they'll be exempt. And they'll be able to get out of the particular rule. But that's what they're attempting to do. They don't really care why. Do they care why they have to go to sleep now? That's not really what they're interested in. That's what they say. But they don't really mean, why do I have to go to sleep now? They really mean, I don't have to go to sleep now because you don't have a good reason. Right? And therefore, if you tell them, listen, this is the bottom line. We could discuss this, but I'm just saying this is the bottom line. I've thought this through. This is a clear. I'm not budging on this, period. And if you could convince the child that that's true, then I think it diffuses the thing. Because the whole thing is an attempt to manage to get you to change your mind. And if you look weak, then the child will persist and will cry and will fetch and will fight and will question. Keep question. Because they think, they see you're breaking. They see that you're weak. They see that you're not sure. They see that if only they put up a long enough fight and they cry for long enough, then they'll get their way. So they're not, but not because they want to know why, it's just that they realize, you know. So if you could convince them that this is it, period. Again, it doesn't matter. You could cry, you could negotiate, you could do all the different things. The answer is still no. And if you could be convincing enough and say it in the right voice and whatever the case is, then they don't really care why. Do they really care? Is that necessarily what they're interested in? So, but maybe a good parent, so to speak, might. Well, let me explain to you. Once upon a time, there. You know, that's not. They don't need. They don't need. They're not looking. They may be asking for the purely exact rational reason to spell out your cheshbon as a parent or whatever. But that's not. They're not interested in that. Let's say you can actually do it. They'll say, "Oh, I didn't realize. That's why. Okay, I'm going to sleep." That's not. They're not interested. That's not what they're looking for. It's a type of a questioning, which is an attempt to undermine the rule by showing it doesn't really make sense. And again, if you do get them to realize it's a rule is a rule is a rule is a rule, period. I'm the parent, you're the child, this is what I decided. That's just the way it is sometimes. You're a child and you don't know everything. And I don't necessarily, as a parent, have to, you know, reveal all the parental cheshbonos. That's their child. They have to know there's an authority. There is such a thing as an authority. This is the rule in the home. And that's it. And if you, again, that could put an end to the questioning. And then the question doesn't bother them, because they don't really care about the question. The question isn't really what they're interested in. Fine. It's not, my point is, it's not a philosophical question that the child has. Why do I have to go to sleep early? For instance, they don't have the same philosophical question when it's their sibling who has to go to sleep early. Because who cares? That's the rule. What do they care philosophically? They're bothered by what sense of the rule. They don't care about that. They're not trying to figure out rules of being a parent. So maybe that's part of what's going on here. A person often asks, why do in the world, the Yetzirah says, why in the world do I have to, can I eat pig? Why in the world do I have to, whatever, pick your favorite thing to question, and other people question. Why can't I peg this guy? I care. What's the difference? Who cares? The person is often, the Yetzirah. There's a different type, there are different questions. There's an intellectual question, which a person is trying to understand, studying Torah and mitzvahs, trying to figure out the Tameh mitzvahs. And that's not the Yetzirah, a new Muslim asking the question. That's just learning Torah. That's a legitimate part of Talmud Torah. There's nothing wrong with asking that question. Like any other question, Torah makes sense. But the Yetzirah is not asking that question. Yetzirah's question is, why do I have to keep it? In other words, come on, I really, really want to eat pig. This doesn't really make any sense. Why do I? What possible reason could there be that God cares that I would do it? And the person will ask. And they'll ask and they'll ask and they'll ask and they'll ask, and they'll ask all these questions, you know? But it's not really philosophical questions. What it really is an attempt to rationalize the desire to eat these things and the somehow fantasy that if you could manage to ask it in a way that no one could answer you, which no one could answer you because you're not going to really look for an answer, then you feel like you're legitimate and rejecting it. And maybe your rabbi will actually tell you, you know, you're right. It doesn't really make sense. Fine. You can eat it. Like, it's a fantasy. It's not, there's no such thing as that. But they kind of feel, since the Torah is supposed to make sense, if only I could keep up my line of questioning long enough, I'll be able to budge. I'll be able to budge the Torah and I'll be able to get a dispensation and whatever. And the answer is no. The answer is stop this type of questioning. This type of questioning is not productive questioning. Ani Hashem, gezerti aleichem, ki atem rishon lipater mimenu. God is saying that these are the laws. There are statutes in the Torah. There are certain things which you're not a God, and you're not the lawgiver, and you don't know everything about what's good for man. And there comes a point where you have to subordinate yourself to the Creator. And He's saying, this is a gezerah. All you're negotiating and all you're questioning, they're not going to get you out of it. So you're not getting out of it. This is it. This is the degree. This is the total degree. You should learn it. You should study it. L'lechas b'hem. Don't say, look, I learned all the rules and I'm done. I already learned Torah. No. Don't go turn away from Torah now and learn something else. It's perfectly legitimate to learn it and to study it and to try to understand it. And the more you study the chukim, you will gain insight into them. And you'll get insight into the beauty of the law structure of the halacha. And you can get depth about the philosophy and how it benefits you and all that. And that's fine. Allah has b'ham. Don't leave it either. First of all, keep it. Don't just keep it and blindly turn away and say, look, I guess I just have to blindly keep it. That's just it. Now I'll go learn other stuff. No, on the contrary. Stick at it. It's not dissuading you from thinking about these things, from these mitzvahs. On the contrary, you should think about them. But don't think about them because you think the end of your thinking about them is going to get you a dispensation. No, there's no dispensation. So it's not, it's like, oh, well, do you think there would be? Emotionally, you do. That's the nature of the questioning, and the God is saying, laying down the law. There's no exceptions. There's no idea that if you really, really want pig and you really think it doesn't make sense, then it's okay. That's not the nature of the system. There's such a thing as the law, laying down the law. This is it. Reminds me of, there's a story, I have to recreate it. I think I heard from Yosef, maybe Yosef or your father. You know the story I'm saying? There's a guy who went off the derech. It's like, maybe it's a joke, I don't know, a joke, a real story, or maybe a gadol story, I don't know, I'm not very good at stories or whatever, but something to the fact that the guy basically went off the derech, you know? And he came and he met his Rebbe somewhere, and I don't know where. Either he met his Rebbe, or he died, and he met HaKadosh Baruch Hu up in Shemayim, however the story goes, you know?
You never heard this one.
Well, I'm not very good at this, maybe you did, you know? So the Rebbe, let's say it's the Rebbe, he said to him, he says, no, whatever, what happened, you know, you know, what kind of thing is this? You just went totally off, you fell off on Torah mitzvahs, what about everything, you know? So he said something, he says, well, no, Rebbe, I had kashas, and I had questions. So the Rebbe said to him, he says, no, you didn't have kashas, you had terutzim, you had answers, which means that you decided that you don't want to keep these things, and it's hard for you. Now, you had a problem. How am I supposed to not just eat pig? I can't just eat pig. So your answer was, it doesn't make any sense. But in other words, his point is that he didn't begin with a question. What is the sense of it? He began with an answer. It doesn't make any sense, and he began with a premise. I don't want to keep it. And he's thinking, how could I manage to not keep it? Oh, I found an answer. It doesn't make any sense. So it's a matter of the starting point. So the Yetzer Hara, which is asking about it, is not coming. It's a different kind of a question. That's like he says, Lama lana l'shomra, why is it to us to keep them? I don't think it means it's asking a question. There's no, it's a rhetorical question. It's not, he's not looking for an answer. Can you please tell me a reason? It's like a, it's a knockout. Right? That's just their statement. Yeah. So it could be the lalachas b'ahem is part of it. That idea is that it's telling you you're not allowed to question it. You're not allowed to leave it. You can question it, but you're not. This is what's interesting. It's like he's asking, why are we keeping it? And what are you answering him? You're not allowed to leave it. Leave it? Who's talking about leaving it? He's just asking a question. No. That's what he's saying. He's saying, why do I have to keep it? I don't have to keep it. So he's saying, no. You're not allowed to leave it. But you have to guard them, and you have to keep at them. To al tifteru mitocham, don't turn your energies away from them. It's not enough just to keep it. You should keep your energies in it. You should learn it. Don't say, I learned the Chachmas Yisrael. I already learned all the mitzvahs. I know the halachas. Now I can learn other Chachma. No. The approach is not to basically tell a guy, that's it, blindly accept it. At the beginning, yes. You got to know that there is a bottom line. This is the law and there's no room to negotiate. At the same time, the Torah is not into just blind acceptance. That's the starting point. But at the same time, study it. Don't just leave it. Don't just blindly accept it and walk away. On the contrary, study it. Learn it. There's much depth in it. The more you put your energy into it, the more you will appreciate it. But the person, when they're starting out and they're emotionally driven by that question, is not ready to hear this answer. They have to, before they're ready to hear the answer, they have to change their attitude to one of accepting that this is authoritative. Then they're ready to open up their mind towards understanding why it's authoritative. And this is, you know, a person you could give this advice to, a person who may say that the doctors, they don't know what they're talking about. They think smoking, how could it be smoking is dangerous? How could it be whatever thing it is? Yeah, right, exactly, yeah. The guys lived so the longest time, they smoke away like a chimney, that can't be, that doesn't make, you know. So how could it be? What they're really just saying is, I want to smoke, and therefore I'm going to justify by this question. So, but it's wise for a person like that to say, listen, the doctors say it's dangerous. Do you want to know why? I'm just telling you, this is the bottom line. All the doctors say it's dangerous. So you might think otherwise, but you don't realize you're not a doctor. So this is the authority to say it is. Period. Stop smoking. Now you want to understand why? You can understand why. I'm willing to, you know, but you got to be willing to put in hours to be able to understand. You want me to explain to you all the science behind it? Fine. But that, but you know, the person's not ready to hear the science. Before, you got to stop the guy down his tracks. Listen, you think you're an authority or you're not an authority. The doctor's an authority. They're saying it's dangerous. Stop. Don't. You got to get him off his negativity and his denial of the thing. First, you got to get him to realize he's not the authority. Only then could you open him up and to get him to talk about it.
Is that always the way it works? Just that when a person doesn't want to deal with whatever the reality is.
Yes.
That they will
ask questions.
When they ask questions, they're not asking questions. Yeah. They're
yes.
I don't know what do you even call it.
I guess it's like almost like a defense. It's like instead of.
And I think I probably have the experience of this with people all the time because then you give them the answer to that question and they have a different question. It's like constantly a moving target.
It's a distraction from the. I guess it's like a distraction from saying, I don't want to keep it.
I don't want this.
So they feel guilty, too guilty to just say something like that. So they make up an excuse and they change the conversation to, I don't want to keep it, to this doesn't make any sense. And I have a question. This, end up going in a circle. You realize it's not really the issue here.
But if that would go, that there is a conviction that if something makes sense, you do have to do it. And they're trying to, be based on that, everybody has that awareness.
Yes, exactly. And they also feel like they're big philosophers. Because what do you want me to do? It doesn't make any sense. So, right? I mean, what do you yourself tell me it should make sense? I'm just saying it doesn't make sense. Right? So it is a... The only thing is it works I mean, you have to at some point justify the fact that the Torah is true altogether, because
yeah,
otherwise...
That's the meta that you don't have to then have this.
Yes, yeah. If you don't have that, though, then you can't just tell the person God said so, because he doesn't know that that's even true. So, I mean, this is presuming the guy's within the system. He has questions, and he's going to start, you know... Yeah, what about the Umos HaOlam? I'm just wondering, is there a difference between, it says the Yetzer Hara asks on it, Lama Lana Shamrum, and the Umos HaOlam also ask on it? What's the point of saying
that? That's the Umos HaOlam. That's like their complaint, because we're supposed to be the leaders in thought, and
right.
if we're doing something that looks
right.
like it doesn't make any sense, then that kind of undermines our...
Oh, I understand. You mean that's what he'll say?
Yeah,
he's going to say, listen, even the nations of the world think this doesn't make any sense, so...
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know, that's not what I was saying, but...
Oh.
That makes sense.
Oh, so,
yeah,
what...
Yeah,
but it says is that these are the examples that the Yetzer Hara asks on it, why should we keep them? The Umos HaOlam asks on it. So why is the Umos HaOlam part of this discussion? So
the
right.
Yetzer Hara is saying that the Umos HaOlam asks
no,
on it?
No, it's just, no, I don't think it's saying both. It's saying that the Yetzer Hara asks on it, why should we keep them? Comma, I guess. And the Umos HaOlam asks on it. I don't know. I mean, you could say that. They could say that's what the Yetzer Hara is saying, but I don't think that's the plain
nothing.
Reading. I think you're just saying is there's two features
like
of these laws.
That's another argument that people will make. Like, it makes us look bad.
Right,
you know?
Right, exactly. This is the nation's thing. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, that's part of what a person
really
feels. Listen, we're not doing, why should we do this antiquated stuff? It's part of their taina. Part of why they feel there's legitimacy to this whole thing, to their rejection. Mm-hmm. Maybe. Were you saying something else that's...
No,
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, phone?
Oh, it's interesting. Like, I was just thinking of Amavino didn't start teaching anyone until he had the idea really clear in his head.
Right. Right, that's true. Yeah, so why is that... what's your connection to this?
Yeah, that's it. I guess it's... But I mean, it's like human nature to want to argue and not to accept because
right.
you know, cause it's not the Torah doesn't have that kind of appeal
right.
on the surface that
right that's true
you know
mm-hmm.
appreciate
mm-hmm.
and love it you know?
Right.
Rabbi Vader?
Yes.
Is it like a dangerous thing to do to go and explore like other religions? Like,
yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. I think the same thing, the same logic applies. There's two kinds of exploration. There's this type of exploration, which begins with a desire to not keep Torah, and which is normal and natural. People's emotions are against keeping the Torah, and they're curious about other things, but the curiosity is really stemming from a desire to turn away from the Torah. So you feel...
But what if it's not... have right. intention, what if you're sincerely not sure that, let's say, Judaism is the proper or correct religion, then
well,
you still think...
Well, I guess it depends. There's different things. Like, if a person isn't sure, then of course they have to... Why should they keep the Torah? If they think the Torah may not be true, they legitimately have no knowledge. Let's say they don't know that the Torah was given by God at Sinai. They don't have any knowledge or any argument that that's the case. So it would be wise of them to try to confirm that, and if the way to do that is by studying other religions, and how can you tell them not to? That you can't tell them, well, the Torah says not to, that's their questioning. Right? Just like a person who's in a different religion, you tell them, hey, Torah's true, question that. I mean, you know. So the premise is if a person really doesn't know the basic idea, I mean, that's why the Torah Mesinai is so fundamental. But if a person knows Torah Mesinai, so they know that the Torah was given at Sinai, now they just want to look into other religions, so now the question is, what are they motivated by? If they know the Torah is given at Sinai, so they might be because they're just curious. And curiosity is a word which hides some sort of a true motivation, which is you're looking to find something else, you're trying to play the field, or whatever, and that's Aser. That's an Isser. You shouldn't turn after, look after as Nus, and you shouldn't look into like these types of other philosophies. But there's a different thing, which is a person who knows the Torah is true, but it wants to study and appreciate the truth of the Torah, and you could perceive the truth of the Torah by perceiving that which the Torah is against, and that which the Torah undermines through, like Avodah Zarah, and that's what the Pasuk says, Los Silmad Lasos, you're not allowed to learn in order to do, but you could learn in order to show your children how corrupt the other nations are. So there's a type of a study which is part of appreciating the Torah. But it's sometimes tricky, a person could be fooling themselves, but yeah.
Right, so if you're not sure then that Judaism is true, then you're saying it's usher to go and explore those other types of religions.
Well, I'm saying, I guess there's a few levels. If you're not sure if it's true, then it's hard to say it's usher because you're not sure if the usher even means anything. Right? What do you mean, usher? Maybe the Torah is not... I mean, you have to know that the Torah is true in the first place. So I'm saying is if you know the Torah is true, or that's your conviction, that you have whatever it is which has convinced you that it is true, now you're just curious about other religions, then I think that's what's usher. Yeah.
I would just add that this is something Mar and I were discussing recently, of the difference between when people want to know which, like, is Judaism true or are other religions, you know, which maybe the other religions are true, or you know, the question of whether or not Judaism is true is not, it's not a question of, what we were discussing was that really what a person wants to know is whether or not what's true. In other words, is Judaism true or is a different religion true? It's what's true altogether, and to be able to understand and appreciate what is being offered in these different systems. And if a person is being honest with themselves about what it feels like and what the experience is of understanding something is true, that's different from feeling like something is very fulfilling and very, you know, it's very meaningful. And what other religions offer, really a person can understand in terms of the psyche of a person and how those things appeal to a person's psyche. And that is just a completely different realm from what's true and not true. And whether or not Judaism is true is not evaluated according to like how appealing it is, but whether or not it makes sense. Like first comes a person's appreciation of what something's true, and then you see that Judaism is in line with the way that, the nature of a person's understanding, and that differentiates it from other religions. And that's just something we were talking about this past week.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I think that one thing that's interesting is that it does take a certain humility, and I think that's part of the idea of the chukim, is that a person has to realize that there's a lot which you could know the Torah makes perfect sense, and you could see the mishpatim, and you could see the sense and the chachma of the Torah, how it's designed. And once you see that, then it's rational for a person to say, look, there's other things beyond which I don't understand, but I understand that it's given by God. And I see the Chachmas Hashem in many areas, and therefore it's well wise for me to humble myself before His knowledge, even in areas which I don't understand them, just like a doctor. Like if I have a doctor, and the doctor tells me to do something, you say, could I question him and go to a different doctor? Of course, why should you trust this doctor? But assuming that the doctor has proven to you many times that he knows what he's doing, so then a person, then he tells you, oh yeah, by the way, you're not allowed to, you're not, stop eating red meat. Then you'll say, oh, 1 second, let me ask another doctor. So that's not because your reason to question him, it's just because you don't like what he's telling you. So there comes a point where you have to humble yourself and realize, like, you know, maybe I don't understand exactly why the doctor's advising me that, but it's wise, since I've seen the doctor say wise things all along, I have to realize even in this thing which I don't necessarily understand, it's reasonable for me to accept his authority. You know, but a person kind of wants to feel they could understand every single thing about themselves, but that's an arrogant type of thing. There's, of course, again, you have to know that it's true in the first place, otherwise why should you accept it? But assuming you do know it's true, now the fact that you don't understand every single thing isn't a kasha, because that's reasonable. You're a person. Yeah, it's interesting also, it says in Shvatai Tasu, Eschukasai Tishmoru, Mishpatim, the things which are, you know, intuitive, you should do. But the chukim, you should guard. Because guard, it could be, is because you need to guard them. Because since your emotions are counter to them, you need guarding. Because it's a kind of a thing that you don't intuitively feel you should be keeping. So the way you have to make sure you have to be on guard against slipping when it comes to these mitzvahs because of the fact that there's your emotions are against it. You know? All right. Any other comments or questions?
Why is the next pasuk say the same thing?
Why does the next pasuk say the same thing? Rashi says it's including other things which are not, I don't know. That's a, yeah, the Rashi seems to be taking that up in the next pasuk, but you know, I don't know. You could look into that if you want to, but it's another, it's a fair, good question. I just don't know. Alright? Any other questions? Okay, Miriam, you good?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Nice, good questions and comments. Okay, so have a good night.